Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Orlando Soccer Show podcast. Today we have a very special guest joining us before he leaves Orlando for good. I'm glad we were able to track him down and fit into his very busy schedule. Former head coach of the Orlando Pride, Tom Sermani.
Yeah, good afternoon, Austin, and hopefully not for good. Hopefully there'll be some visits in the future.
Yeah, but not as a resident of Orlando.
Probably not as a resident, no.
So let's kind of start and talk about everything that happened this past season, and then we'll move into what the future holds for you. Yeah. So obviously this season didn't go as expected, considering how 2017 went. What do you feel went wrong? Because it was all leading up from 2017 into this season with almost the same roster, right? A few positions with turnover, with Steph leaving, and you bring in different players in left back, Carson Pickett, and then a little bit of change in the midfield. But the main part of the roster was the same. What do you feel just kind of didn't work?
It's very hard to pinpoint, and it's something that kind of frustrated and eluded us for most of the season. I think we were confident, very confident, going into the season because we hadn't made that many changes, and we felt we had the core of the team, and certainly in certain areas we strengthened the team quite significantly. So we were going into the season, you know, really filled with confidence, and to be honest, after probably the first part of the season, we still had that confidence in the team. I just felt that we sort of waned as the season went on. And, you know, it's the difficult part is that everybody, you look for a solution, and sometimes there isn't one solution. I think, you know, we probably were impacted a bit with particularly the Brazilian and the Australian World Cup qualifiers. When you look at those teams played, the Australians played six games, all competitive. The Brazilians played seven games, and all these games took over a period of less than 3 weeks right at the start of the season. So that's like playing a mini World Cup going into the season. And what usually happens is in the World Cup, after a World Cup, is players have time off to refresh and relax, and they were straight into games. So I felt that as the season wore on, I felt that we just didn't have that energy that the team needed to continue to get results. What we did, even when we were felt not consistent in our performances, we're still managing to grind out results. But we were grinding out results. We weren't kind of as convincing as we had been in 2017. So I knew there was a time in the season that there was going to be a little bit of a crisis, and leading into the last six games where we didn't do well at all, we had a meeting to try and look at ways that we needed, what we needed to do to try and get in or stay in the top four at that stage. And unfortunately, things went south from there. That's part of it. So I think losing those international players and the games that they played and the travel, etc., had an impact. And I just think in games, if you look at games, we had times where we played very, very well, but we just couldn't sustain it for the whole 90 minutes. And when we were having down times, we tended to concede. And when we were having up times, we didn't tend to score. And, you know, one significant example that stands out to me is we played Washington, D.C. At home, and I think it was in the first 12 minutes, we had seven goal-scoring chances. Not all clear, but seven chances or half chances. And I think their first shot at goal came after 25 minutes, got deflected from a corner, and they scored a goal. So those were the kind of things that go wrong. And when that happens, it saps the confidence of the players. And then it tends to become, okay, here we need to go and we need to get up for it again and we need to battle again. And that just tended to be the theme, you know, as the season wore on. And we would not finish off the chances that we created, and then we would suddenly concede goals from like almost nothing, and one thing kind of led to another, and the results just went poorly for us.
So now, you know, looking back at the 2017 season and 2018 season, do you feel it was just kind of a mental thing for the team, and just like because so many things went wrong and they kept building up and building up, that it just continued to sap their confidence, and it just kept building up and building up.
Yeah, that's a huge factor, and that's one of the interesting dynamics in sport, whether it be an individual sport or whether it be a team sport, is that, you know, mental confidence factor, which is in a sense an immeasurable. And you know, when we spoke, what we basically said is we needed people. That's at that time, this is when you needed people, whoever it is, to step up and become game changers. And despite a lot of trying, we never really had that. So when you look throughout the season, for me, we had a lot of 6.5 out of 10 performances, but not enough 8 to 8.5 to 9 out of 10 performances. And that kind of, when you're doing that in this league, particularly if you're a key player, it becomes very hard to win games. And if you look at the teams that were successful, at crunch time, their key players produced, you know, either scored or created goals or saved goals or whatever. And for this season, as I say, inexplicably, that just didn't happen. And so then, as I say, what leads on to then is that players' confidence gets sapped a little bit, and with that affects your mental outlook, and then with that affects, you know, affects the actual football, soccer performance.
So let's kind of go into the team itself and the lineups, because last year, I remember you said, you know, the lineups kind of made themselves because they were on such a good run of form that it was easy just to keep picking the same lineup. But this year you had to try and tinker with it. You had to try different formations, different players in different positions. How difficult was that to try and fit pieces together to try and work, and then when it didn't, move things around again and again?
It's ironic. It's always difficult when things aren't quite going well. And that's one of the frustrations and one of the arts of coaching, in a sense. If things are going well, it's dead easy. And that's what happened last year. In that run that we had with 9 games undefeated, you know, if somebody was injured or we felt somebody needed a rest, it was just a simple replacement, and then bang, things ticked over. It was kind of like the opposite this year, where it's like, well, did we play that player? But last week, she struggled a little bit, but the one that we might pick instead of her didn't have a good game a couple of weeks ago. So it's all, so that it's basically you're dealing with it around performances that are not quite up to the level that you're hoping for. And that's what makes the changes difficult. The dilemma you have as a coach when things aren't going well, and supporters will tell you this, they'll say one thing, they'll say, well, he never changed anything. He obviously doesn't know what he's doing. He hasn't changed anything. Then if you start to try and change, and we honestly spent a lot of time, I'll go into that in a second. When you change stuff, then the supporters say, well, they're too busy tinkering with the lineup. They don't get a consistent lineup.
So it's one of those. You can never be right, really.
You can never be right until the results go correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, to be honest, the time, the energy, and the effort that our staff, myself, players put in to try and do things, and we had to make the changes and change the system, what was significant. Every week we were racking our brains about ways to try and get on a roll. But no matter kind of what we did, whether we tweaked the system, it might work that one week and we think, okay, we've cracked it here, this is good. We had a midweek game in Houston that we lost, which again we should never have lost. And then we backed up at Utah on the Saturday. Very difficult altitude. Changed the system, played very well and won the game. And we think, okay, that's, you know, that system looks good. We go out with the same system next week, boom, we're inconsistent again. And those were the things that really, you know, threw us off this year and made our decisions very, very difficult.
So now what about the players? Because you mentioned like trying to give players time off and resting. Talking to players and trying to convince them, you know, this is when we're going to rest you. And if they say, well, no, I'm fine, I can play. How difficult is it just trying to kind of manage all of the players who want to continue playing and feel like they should be playing, but then you have to try and give other players different chances and kind of tweak and have the next week in mind or something?
I think it depends on the player and it depends on the circumstance. You know, so sometimes it's kind of straightforward because, you know, there's really concrete reasoning that they can accept, and that might be backed up with some scientific facts as well from our fitness guys. And sometimes it can be a little bit more difficult because players all want to play, and particularly the senior players that we had in our team with the pedigree that they have, they expect to play games. Mm-hmm. So it then can become a difficult conversation. But we've had to have, you know, a few of those during the season, and that's just part of the job.
So now, as we move ahead, you know, end of the season, playoffs are out of reach. What was going through your mind as the season kind of tailed off? Were you aware of a possibility of stepping down or anything like that?
I was aware of it because I just felt this season was, you know, it was extremely draining, and I just felt that, you know, it's probably one of the few times in my career where I just wasn't able to find a solution. Mm-hmm. Most times, as a coach, you're at a variety of clubs. Sometimes it's going well, sometimes it's not going well. Mm. So you have all those experiences. But you tend to, within those experiences, have a kind of clear idea of what needs to be fixed. Now, whether you can fix it or not, it's different, but you have a clear idea mm-hmm. that this needs to be fixed. I think one of the difficulties I found this year is that I didn't know exactly what had to be fixed because it wasn't an obvious fix. Mm-hmm. It was stuff that just happened and you go, oh, how did that happen? If it had been, for example, we keep losing goals from corners, okay? Well, you set your corner kicks up differently. Mm-hmm. Or we keep losing goals in this scenario, then from transition. Well, you set up defensively and you put some real strict structure how you defend. But if it's a combination of things that it was this year that was hard to pinpoint, then it becomes frustrating. So as it got to a close at the end of the season, and particularly which typified our season, the loss at Sky Blue in the last game, which is again a game that we should have had out of sight probably before we lost it. I think this team maybe needs a different voice on the training ground. So that was one thing. The second thing is that you're always thinking ahead to say, okay, if that's not going to be the case, what do we need to do to strengthen the team? Where do we need to strengthen it? What kind of players do we need to bring in? So those were the two thoughts bumping through this empty head of mine.
So it was more of a mutual decision?
Yeah, it was. It was both, I think, both parties felt that it was that's in the best interest of the team moving forward.
Do you have any regrets?
No, I don't. I think I sincerely, this sounds really bad because it's a very uncoach-like thing to say. I think it was the right decision, and sometimes you have to think as coaches and competitors, as coaches are, we never like to give up. We like to keep on keeping on through the tough times. The good times are easy, through the tough times and battle on and find a solution. But there's other times when you need to think, you know, to be honest, I really feel this team needs somebody different to perhaps come in and change whatever somebody else comes in and changes, just to give it a fresh look, a fresh process to things. And I think that's in their best interest. And I think it's in my best interest as well, because unless I was 100% committed and knowing what I wanted and what I wanted to do and be fully focused on going, bang, I'm ready to go next year, then I'm being dishonest in the job. And then ultimately, I don't think unless you're fully committed to the job, then you're not ready to do it. And I just felt in that space. And I still feel, you know, people said to me, well, how will you feel in 3 weeks, 4 weeks when you have time to kind of just go and then get back on it? And you know, even now, 3 or 4 weeks down the track, I still feel it was the right decision for everybody.
You're right. It is a very uncoach-like thing for you to say.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but that's kind of how I really felt about it. And, you know, we've got a great group of players. We've got a great club, a fantastic staff. It's been, you know, an absolutely wonderful 3 years. So it's kind of like one of those people be saying, are you crazy? Because there's not many better positions. But I think the time was right.
Yeah. And again, 3 years on the same job, you know, and You did have 2017 as a big success, but it, you know, it's almost the 3-year anniversary of the team being announced and you being announced as coach back in at Lake Eola.
It was, that's right. It's around about this week, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah. Quite, time flies, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It certainly does.
So, what's next for you?
You're never quite known coaching. I'm quite happy just to have some time to relax and reflect. And, you know, I'm at that age now and stage of my coaching career that if nothing definitive happens, I can comfortably walk away from the game and have, you know, say to myself, I've had an unbelievable run in soccer with the jobs I've had, the experiences I've had and the opportunities that I've had. If something interesting comes up, I'm speaking to a group at the moment, which has got a big interest to me. If that happens, then that'll be the next stage of my career. At the moment, I'm getting ready to leave Orlando at the end of this week, sadly, and head back down to Australia, where, you know, it's not really been the main, it's not been a major thing, but my wife's obviously been in Australia for the past year. I'm working down there and our home is down there, so it'll be good to get a little bit of time going back home.
Yeah, spend some time with family, you know, because I think I read an interview that you did a while back that, you know, you said that you never had kids because the jobs that you had and your wife had didn't really allow you to cultivate a family and spend time with that family because you're always traveling, you're always going from job to job. So, you know, spending time is probably at a premium.
It is. It has been. You know, I think a lot of people think that I'm actually just a myth, you know, because my wife ends up turning up at weddings and functions and events, and I'm really there because I'm always either somewhere else in the country or more often than not in a different country, on a different continent, actually, most of the time. And, you know, I think people think, nah, Alison, I don't think that Tom actually exists. I think he's a figment of your imagination because we've never actually seen him. So it'll be, you know, it probably won't happen because something will crop up for me that will take me off somewhere else. And my wife has been unbelievably supportive for 30 years. She's probably glad to see the back of me and get me get me out of the house. That's allowed me to do that and allowed me to have these great, because she does come along to things, have these great experiences in our lives. And I haven't regretted a minute of it. And, you know, as I say, there might be a new experience ready to start soon. There might not be, in which case I'll just spend some time down under, watch some soccer, watch some Orlando Pride and other players playing in the W League, sit in the comfort of the corporate box instead of being in the stressful sideline, and just enjoy some time.
Yeah, and you know, for you and it has to be the right situation, right? It won't, you know, if someone comes along and says, well, here's an opportunity for you, you're at the stage of your career where it has to be the right situation, not just any situation.
Yeah, correct. It has to be something that I'll find that will be challenging, that I'll want to do, and in an environment that I want to work in.
We've got a dog chilling here with us. I do want to ask you about some other things that went on with the team. Obviously, recently, Sydney Aru came out with her news that she had a miscarriage and, you know, very courageous to come out and make it public. Going through that situation with her as she went through it, what was that like for you and the coaching staff?
Well, the key thing for us at that time was probably a couple of things. One, the most important thing was to make sure that we were there to give her whatever she needed, whatever support she needed, however much time it was that she needed to be away from the team, or whether how much she needed to be around the team, and what, you know, what she needed to do and what we needed to do to help that. So that was the most critical thing. You know, football's a game. You know, other things in life are far more important. The second thing was obviously keeping the confidentiality of the situation. And there was a few weeks leading into the miscarriage where Sid was, you know, it was a difficult time for her overall. And, you know, it was important that everybody kept that confidence in check, and they did. And Sid was amazing because she actually sat down with the team and told the team as well. and everybody kept that confidence. So considering the number of people that knew about it, I think it's a great thing and a great reflection on our players and staff that everybody sort of kept it in-house and was there to support Sid. And I think, and hopefully that, her knowing that she had that support from everybody within our group, that sort of helped her. But she was amazing during it all. You know, just mind-blowing how strong she was, that she managed to cope with it in the way that she managed to cope with it, and then get back on the field in the way that she managed to get back on the field. It was just phenomenal. And I think her coming out with it now, you know, I think it's very, very powerful for a lot of people, and particularly young women who may be facing that situation and how traumatic it is, that you know, for Sid to come out and bring that out publicly hopefully might help other women.
Yeah, and I think you said it when you first signed Sid at the beginning of the season. You know, she has a lot of different causes that she supports and that she makes very vocal on social media, and she's a great ambassador for the Pride, and that this just kind of adds on to that resume.
Definitely. It just shows her commitment, her strength of character, and her just humanity more than anything. So, big question marks about her tattoos, right enough. You know, I'm not a big tattoo guy, but, you know, I'll let that go.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
She's a fantastic, wonderful character, wonderful person, and a really committed soccer player.
And talk a little bit, if you could, about the team, because, you know, there's a lot of players that were on the team in your tenure that were, you know, good people that had different causes and different passions outside of soccer. And you know, it was a team, but it was also a team of very good people.
And that is equally, I know it sounds maybe cliched, but for me, that's equally as important. It's not just about the girls and the players and the team being football players. It's about them being people in their lives, in football and outside of football. Are all equally important. And I think as a coach, you've got a responsibility. It's not just about the soccer. Right. It's about the person. And we've had some, the connection between our players individually and collectively with the fans and with the community is extraordinary. And the players are really conscious of that and really committed towards being part of the community. You know, you get Danny and Rachel doing things with the kids cancer and connecting up with some of these young people who, you know, have this terrible illness. You get people like Kristen Edmonds, you know, who's a huge dog lover and goes in and helps out with, you know, animals that have been mistreated. And, you know, and there's a whole range of players that do different things. But also that any time that anything has happened where players have been required, there's no hesitancy. And our girls going along, and not just going along as tokens. You know, you often get the athlete, well, where's the athlete here? Well, there they are, standing in the corner, you know, looking at the watch, checking to see if the hour's up when they can go. Any time our players have gone to anything, they're just their commitment around that appearance or whatever it is been phenomenal. The way they've interacted with anybody that's been involved in anything has been phenomenal. And, you know, me being me, at times, you know, groups come along to training and our players, you know, interact with those people. They've just been out there slogging themselves for an hour and a half in the humidity of Florida, and they still take the time to go over and communicate and talk with people, make them feel welcome. And I mean, for me, there's a couple of things. I think it should be a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. That's just me, because I think if you're privileged enough that people actually want to talk to you or want to invite you to things or think you're important enough that you can make a difference, then I think that's a great privilege to be able to do that. And I'm very fortunate that the group of players I've had for 3 years felt the same way and did those things and did them remarkably well.
Yeah, and a lot of credit goes to Kay Rollins with the community engagement as well, because I remember I talked to her a few years ago about like when the club first started, and they wrote into players' contracts that they needed to serve serve in the community at least this many times to get the engagement going. And I think that kind of translated over to the Pride when they started in 2016. Yeah. But it kind of evolved to where it was, instead of just being a requirement, it was more...
Part of the job. It's part of what you do. Yeah. And that, you know, the very first meeting that Kay and Phil at that time had with the players, that was exactly spelled out. This is what our club's about. And this is a critical element of our club, the foundation, the community. And these are things that you do. If you're part of this, this is what you buy into. You want to be part of this team, part of this club, this is what you do. And then once that's established, then it becomes part of the, I don't say part of the job because it sounds like, well, that's a job, but it becomes part of the responsibility of being a player or a staff member or whatever with Orlando City or Orlando Pride. Mm.
And you know, with the Pride and with the way that it was run, how different was it compared to any other club that you've been with?
I think it was significantly different than most clubs that I've been involved with, simply because of what it stood for, or what it stands for. And that's different, and it so ties in with my philosophy that that's why I've loved being here, is that a club's got to be more than just a club, because it does connect with the community. Athletes are really, particularly the athletes, they're the most important ones. I'm just the old guy with the grey hair in the back of photograph. they're the ones that connect, and the good that they can do is significant. And sometimes, you know, athletes, they don't realise it. They think, well, you know, why? But, you know, if you're a young kid and you just have that connection with an athlete and you go away with a really good experience, it's amazing how positive an impact that can have. And I think that's where this club is unique in what those expectations were for players and others and staff as well coming into the club, and how they should be and how they should interact with whoever they have to interact with in this community. And you know, as I say, that's what makes a difference between being a real club and just being a football team.
Yeah. Now, going back to coaching just for a minute here, you've been able to coach a lot of world-class players over your career, and you know, a lot of the U.S. women's national team and Australian national team players you've coached multiple times now, because you've coached the national team and now with the Pride. But Marta, you know, six-time world player of the year, what was it like coaching her? Because
dead easy. It was really, really that. It was very, very easy, because she's got such a passion for the game. That the most difficult part I had with Marta was trying to get her to slow down and trying to get her to relax and take a day off every now and then, because, you know, she has had an unbelievable schedule.
Yeah.
She's reaching the stage where she's, you know, 32, 33, 34, around that age, where your preparation and your body needs some different things to prepare for games. But she still was in there like an 18-year-old would be in there, would never miss a minute of training, would never stop. If you're playing a five-a-side, a six-a-side, she would be up there, back there, or across there, back here. And just her enthusiasm was infectious on the training ground and in the dressing room. You know, an amazingly grounded person, an amazing team person, loves the football, soccer, knows the game inside out, knows what's good, knows what's bad. I know that sounds simple, but it's not that simple. and just is, you know, being a great player and a great person.
Yeah, and you know, the times we were at training, you know, even in the last 15 minutes of trainings when we were able to watch, they got intense. You know, she's an incredibly intense player.
Yeah, I mean, she's you know, been brought up in the back streets of Brazil, playing against men, playing against boys, no prisoners, where you have to fight for every inch of the ball. And she brings that enthusiasm into training every day, and she brings that competitive spirit into training every day. And that, you know, if you're a young player, and we spoke to some of our young players, and they say, well, what do you need to do? And we say, just look what Marta does. That's what you need to do to be a pro. So, No, inspirational.
Yeah, and you know, outside of Marta, you had Alex Morgan, you had Ashton Harris, Ali Krieger, and you know, all these
great
upper
pros.
Echelon players as well.
Yeah, just great pros, you know, like really dedicated professionals, winners, want to do well. Again, never miss a day's training, are out there in the field, you know, some of the first players out there, last players to leave, real commitment to the team, real commitment to the club, you know, and just great people. You know, we've had that, as I say, a great set of players. I know when you have seasons like this, coaches can often do it. You look and you think, well, the players aren't trying, I don't think they care, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I can't say that for this group of players. They've been, you know, just wonderful to work with.
So now, as we wrap up here, because I've kept you for a little while here, you know, looking at this team, right, your former team, do you have any thoughts about who might be the right person?
I don't actually know who might be the right person, but I know that in this league that, you know, we went for the quality of players.
Hmm.
I think, you know, what perhaps has to happen around those quality players is there has to be some more what I'd call robust players.
Hmm.
And I think that's probably, you know, if we're looking... If I was looking to sign players or change players, then, you know, I'd be bringing in a couple of players that physically are robust and suit the style of this league, even if maybe technically they're a little bit more deficient.
What about in terms of who would be the, you know, to manage the team, I guess?
Oh, you mean for my job?
Yeah.
I really don't
know. I don't mean to make that a little awkward
for
you.
No, it's okay. No, because I'm partly involved in the process. I'm helping out as much as I can.
Oh, okay.
Because obviously there are some people who have applied for the job that I've got more knowledge of than the club, simply because of my background in the game and the countries that I've coached in.
Yeah.
You know, it's not for me to name wise, but I think it's just important to look for somebody that you think would have the right fit. I think somebody that has experience with the American culture,
mm-hmm.
I think would be beneficial. I think someone that's, if that's not the case, but has maybe like me moved around, so they've had experiences in different areas.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, that's a couple of considerations that the club may have to look at, and then they have to decide what type of coach they want to get in. Do they want a young coach that's really keen and they're starting out? Do they want somebody that's more experienced? Do they want somebody that's really well connected around the world? So, yeah, there's a few. It's interesting that trying to find the right candidate for jobs sometimes is very easy because there's a lot out there, and sometimes it can be quite difficult.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you know, there's so many more teams and leagues popping up around the world in women's soccer now, and there's so many more opportunities for coaches to get their starts, to make a name for themselves, and then, you know, make their way up. Like, I mean, you did it, what, 30 years ago now?
Yeah, 30 years ago I took all those kind of jobs.
Yeah.
Even 20 years ago I took all those kind of jobs to try and get you going in different directions and trying to get you up that coaching ladder.
So for young coaches that are trying to make their way up, or even young players, what would you say to them, having done it, been there and done that?
I always admire coaches that go in and take... If you're going to be a coach, it's a risky business. You have to take risks.
Hmm.
So if you're a young coach, you need to look and take opportunities that you think are going to help you along the way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that may be taking a step backwards. You know, a couple of times in my career, I've taken a perceived step backwards because I saw a potential in the job and the potential for that job to then take me in a better direction. You know, you can't be, well, no, I don't fancy that job because it pays me $5,000 less than I want, or it's in North Dakota, but I want to be in Miami Beach. You know, if you're going in the coaching game, you need to take those risks. You need to be prepared to get out there and take jobs and get into jobs. And then the second thing is you need to network. And by networking, I mean it's just sort of times being yourself and communicating with people.
Mm.
And that way, in some ways subtly, you're actually selling your skills.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so for young coaches, I would say, you know, to keep doing that and to keep trying to build up a network of people. And the more environments you're in, the more people that you work with, and if your work is then perceived as being good, the more opportunities end up cropping up for you.
Yeah, and I feel like that's with any job, really. You know,
it is. Yeah.
It's your ability to do the job and who you know.
Yeah.
And I think who you know is becoming more and more prevalent than what you know.
Yeah, and because people want people around them that they can trust,
mm-hmm.
that they can rely on. And if you look, you know, when Jason and Miles and CJ left here, I mean, CJ and Miles picked up jobs in a heartbeat,
mm-hmm.
Because they're guys that people can trust,
yeah.
And they're good at their jobs and they're good people. And there you go. And that's what happens.
Yeah. All right. With that, I think we're going to go ahead and end it here. But before I do, I do want to say something while we're still recording. So, you know, it has been an absolute pleasure to cover this team with you as coach. You know, it's whether it's been television, radio, random blog, just somebody going in and watching training, you've always treated them the same way. You've never kind of treated someone different, regardless of their affiliation with different outlets or anything. And you've always been personable, friendly, and easy to talk to, as we have just done for almost 40 minutes. But I do want to say a sincere thank you from everyone within the media. I know I speak for everyone because I've talked to everyone about you. They all feel the exact same way, and they're going to miss you. They really will.
Thank you. That's very nice.
Oh, yeah, of
very
course.
Nice. But it's just, you know, everybody's out doing the job, and we're all in this, we're all in the same game. We're all trying to do our best to promote the game and do the right thing. And, you know, as I say, philosophy of this club and the people involved in it are that, you know, we're in a privileged position. And if journalists or other people want to take the time to talk to me or any of our players or staff, then I think it would be remiss to be anything else other than friendly. And I've had an equally friendly response from the people that have come and covered us every day and been really supportive, and it's been a great privilege to have been in the position to be able to communicate with you guys. So yeah. Thank you.
Well, you give what you receive, that kind of mentality, right?
Yeah, most times, yes, yeah. In life. Most times in life, that's a win. Yes.
Fair enough. All right. Well, Tom, thank you very much again. Best of luck in your future endeavors. We'll be in contact, I'm sure, and don't be a stranger around Orlando.
I won't be. Thank you, Austin.